Now we are going to have our discussion, and I would start with the question, what makes Second Life, because it's an evidence, it is attractive, what makes Second Life attractive? Is that why we are not sleeping and eating and we can go directly to the things we'd like to do? And I'm going to ask first Robin Harper from Linden Lab.
Well, I think what I would start with, let me apologize, the community I was talking about earlier that's working on sort of a meta-governance system is called the Metaverse Republic. So to answer the question, to me what makes Second Life so compelling is kind of two things. First, it's the fact that it's in real time. It's collaboratively creative in real time. When I'm on my Facebook page, I have messages left there. I can leave messages. If I'm, I can send people things, but it's all asynchronous. Forums are asynchronous. But in Second Life, it's all in real time, and there's a sense of presence that you have when you're dealing with another avatar. So all of a sudden, you have the opportunity to meet people from all over the world in a way that feels very, very close and connected. And so it's the combination of those two things. Collaborative creativity, real-time presence. Those are the things that, for me, make it compelling.
Yeah. So, of course, I agree with you. It's the special combination of aspects which weren't new, which exists before, but in that special combination, I think it's this was the new thing. And I want to add, Second Life is the first virtual platform, the first virtual world, which reached a critical mass of attention and also dynamic going on. So beyond the usual suspects which were residents in the worlds before. And I think especially for metaverses, it's really important to have this critical mass and to have not only specialists acting inside the world, but also a broader audience. And that gives Second Life the first time makes it a really, really dynamic metaverse.
Well, the other thing that I think is different in Second Life from much of what came before, not everything, is the fact that it's all user created. The type of tools that you have go far beyond anything that people have been able to do before, and consequently, I think it draws people in. It gives them the ability to be self-expressive in a way that I don't think has existed in those kinds of combinations before.
So, Eva and Franco Matos, what does attract you to a Second Life as an artist? What makes it attractive?
After all of this talking about Second Life, I wonder what. I think it's, we use it as an instrument, and to me, it's attractive as soon as I can do something that I couldn't do before. And what is interesting in Second Life, I think is I found interesting in it what is interesting in a lot of video games, that is escaping reality, basically not being here now, not being myself. And that is, to me, what culture is about. People usually, when we present projects about our fakes and pranks and jokes, they say, this is fake. You're not doing it for real, so you're like fake, you're not a real artist or whatever. And yeah, of course, it's fake, but I think the whole culture is fake. It's about creating fakes. That's art. I mean, art is not real. The reality is this one. This is a table. Why a painting of a table is a fake table. It's a representation of a table. And what is a novel if not that? You read Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland because you want to live in for a certain period in another world and forget reality, which is good, I think. It's myth. It's about metaphors and myths. It's not true that we are happy. If you are happy with reality, you want escape. In other words, I think that if you don't have this feeling, this necessity to escape reality, it's because you're not creative. It's not because you're so happy.
It's lack of imagination.
I think that's is this on? I think the escaping reality is an interesting point, and I think we're going to see less and less of that moving forward in Second Life. That Second Life just added voice capabilities, so you can now chat directly with people. And as soon as you open that channel up, you learn so much more about people than you get through text, that you can tell gender and nationality and language and age and class and all of these signals that text can hide. And I think that makes it much harder to be someone other than who you are, because as soon as you open your mouth, you're telling someone a lot about who you are. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I think it's going to mean that more people come to Second Life as a place to do something and not a place to be someone else. And I think that's kind of the same process that the web went through, that in the early days of the web, there was the classic New Yorker cartoon that said that on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And I think that was true in the early days, but it rapidly became less and less true. And we now have Facebook and MySpace, where the point is not to be someone you're not. It's to present who you want other people to see you as. But it's with people you know offline, so it's not a huge change from who you are outside of these environments. It's sort of complementing who you see yourself as. I think Second Life is moving more in that direction and away from this sort of identity play space.
I think that's true, but I think there's, at least at the moment, still a significant resistance to that. We recently announced that we were going to let people voluntarily start to verify their identity, beginning with age. And it's been a very controversial decision. You know, in our view, if you want to stay anonymous, you can. But if you want to start letting people know a little bit more about you in a way that's proven, another way to establish trust. But there's a huge resistance to doing that. And interestingly, we've about 30% of the population has downloaded voice, and it's kind of plateaued right there. So we're kind of watching to see what will happen with that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a difference between the people who are there now and the people who might be there in the future. And I think things like voice will bring it to a broader audience, which cares less about what the current residents care about. And so, I mean, my guess is that we'll see sort of a plateau of people who don't care about voice. And over time, we'll start to see more people who do use things like voice, which do transmit more about who you are and are less about the anonymous and private aspects of it.
Yeah, I'm doing this experiment to try to follow conversation and type messages at the same time. And it's not, it's still...
not so easy.
It's not possible. But just to connect to earlier part of the discussion, some comments, this playing roles and fulfill your dreams in Second Life, which is always the aspect everybody talks about, is... when I come out of Second Life, and I've been there many hours in there, and when I come out and see people on the street, you have this feeling, oh, this guy went to a shop and bought shape, skin, eyes, and a fancy leather suit or something. And like you think in these terms of how this will function in Second Life. And in fact, it is so similar, and we just do the same. We are doing very much the same in real life, just to try to play a role and try to fit an image and be someone. Like, I'm not there. I want to be this and going for that. And Second Life somehow for me shows this very clearly.
But it's an economical system too. There are banks in the Second Life, trade in the Second Life. So how far is Second Life from the real world? In a way, it seems that it's very close to it.
I think it's very close to it and becoming more so all the time. You know, I mentioned earlier the whole issue of dealing with real-world laws and how you merge the things that you're doing in a virtual world with the realities of the real world. It's increasingly difficult to tell. I mean, you look outside at Second City. That's the whole point, right?
But how about this idea, which is a lot in science fiction, that we like leave our body, or like the body is encapsulated somewhere, and it's everything is happening like in this area and somewhere on the screen, which is inside maybe, and of course we're not going there so quickly, but we are still embodied and walk around, and I try to. I like to pose this question of this relation. Maybe it's just very, it'll become very normal, just like the email example. Well, I'm online and now I'm here. But some people tend to play a lot and really live in Second Life. Like I have my Second Life experts, which are also here, which are part of my team from New Berlin and from Vienna, and they like I'm not the hardcore player, but they know people who are online all day, and then it's like it's shifting, really. Maybe it's not so many people. It's really shifting through this virtual world, which is their main life in that sense. And what's the balance? Like, how important is which part of these two?
I'm curious. On your answer of this question, because first you said this virtual sceneries enables you to do just the opposite as the first time performers you repeat virtually. So it's really, it must be something very different. Then you said right now, it's all the same. Culture is somehow virtual. Art was virtual from the beginning, so can you explain it?
Yeah, of performance art is probably one of the moments where art and culture try to be as close to reality as possible. So that's why the violence was there, for example. But it was fake in the sense it was controlled. So Chris Burden was getting shot in the gallery, you know, in the street. Otherwise, it would be a gangster, not an artist. And whatever, art is about pretending that you're doing it for real. But of course, it's extremely clear to everybody what is art and what is not, either because of the space. For example, yeah, maybe you're masturbating while you're doing that in a gallery. For the time frame, maybe you're walking around naked, but it's during the Venice Biennial. For who you are. Maybe you are dressed in a super weird way, but you are Andy Warhol. So all of this limitates it, and it makes it immediately recognizable. So whenever, actually, I would say the opposite, that whenever art and culture try to be more real is, in fact, the peak of its fakeness. I think that the fake art, the openly declared fake and fictitious art is much more honest than the real art.
Let me come to another topic. Some people mean that Second Life is some kind of media hype, and that arises now and maybe will vanish in the future. What do you think about that?
You know, there have been so many people coming into Second Life that it has gotten a lot of attention, and I think the members of the press see that and see that their audience is interested in what's going on, and so they cover that. I don't know that I would call it hype so much as curiosity, perhaps. I think a friend of mine says, you know, news is just a reaction. It's just dealing with the unexpected. When it's not so unexpected anymore, it won't be covered anymore, but I don't think that's at all related to whether or not it will continue to grow and be successful. I think they'll find new things to write about as people do new and interesting things in Second Life. So I'm not convinced that there's a relationship there.
I think there is no question. Of course, there was a media hype around Second Life. There's still a media hype. It's now on the other side. It's but it's hype. Yeah. That's a matter of the traditional mass media. So that it's somehow not related to Second Life. It's how TV goes. It's how papers. Newspapers work. So, but there's one interesting part of it. If you look to the stories which became famous, so there's on the one hand it's this real money transfer thing, which stands in the center of a lot of that mass media stories about Second Life. But there's another aspect, and that's the aspect of which is connected to the future of the internet. It's internet 3D, yeah? And somehow there are people who believe that Second Life is somehow a first version or first gives us a first glimpse of what that internet 3D could be. And there is one aspect I find interesting, or a lot of other people who are thinking about Second Life, is that Second Life is idle for that kind of stories because it's 3D, and stories can be told to people who don't know very much about internet and can be explained, so that you can explain to a broader public how internet what internet is or could become, and this 3D aspect of Second Life is very interesting because it's really an interesting question. So allow me to draw a parallel: what's going on in the game sector right now? It's the success of the Wii console from Nintendo, which is very similar to that because it enables the player. Without pressing any buttons, without reading any manuals before to play the game, just by acting, moving hands and moving the body, and somehow I have the feeling, on the one hand it's an innovation, of course. Of the other hand, it's a step back in terms of literacy, computer literacy, and what, for example, players learned in the 30 or 40 years of gaming is to control really complex systems, complex strategy games, first-person shooters, combination out of that with the mouse and the keyboard and all that stuff. And now a system is very successful, which is somehow a step back. You don't need to have all this knowledge and the skills, and that's a question I'm really addressing and would like to talk about.
That means personal managers look at Second Life, and people who have special skills, then they are headhunters and they pick them up and bring them to the concern, whatever.
No, that was not my point. It's just that most of the people still look TV and read newspapers, but not play games. It's still a reality. And if you want to tell them a little bit about the internet and all the future, it's very appropriate if you have that Second Life interface. You have the it's like we know from reality. So you can give them an imagination what it is. And so, but I wonder if it's really the future, or only a step back?
Okay, I would say that we can now open the discussion to the audience. So if you have any questions, please ask us, post them on us. Are there any questions, please?
Hello, my name is Peter, also known as I. Stubbery from Second Promotion. I'm quite some time of my life in Second Life. And people always say, well, things aren't real in there. And I think in virtual reality, maybe the virtuality is a lie and the things are real. because if people interact in there, it must be real. What do you think about this fact?
Who wants to answer?
Okay. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's been sort of a popular misconception that what happens in virtual environments is fake. And I think we're starting to see more people realize that as more people use online services, that just because something happens in a digital space does not mean that it is somehow less affecting. I think that's true for things like Facebook and MySpace, that there can be sort of big social drama in situations like that. And it's because the things you do are socially significant. And the signals look different than we're used to in an offline environment. But I think you're quite right that they're not necessarily less important to people. And people can have very important life experiences in these environments that just look different, and so people think they are not as important.
Mobile microphone.
Yeah, as you see, my name is January, New Berlin, in Second Life. I want to add, I like that it's so different kinds of aspects here, but what I see is, and what I want to add is that the aspect that right now we don't know what's going to happen, and that one thing is clear, that this thing is something which is the first step of something we all know, and everybody can imagine that the internet is more than email or... And the real-time aspect is probably the major issue. That is new, and there's a lot, which helps us to understand and communicate with the world. And the Web 2.0 is actually it's not only technology; it's more understanding of how to use internet and how to communicate. And I think Second Life is not understanding. It's the longer you do it and you use it, you notice that it's more like a consciousness. What happens when you have an avatar which is collecting all your virtual goods and it is you. It is your virtual profile. And it's not only that you can click some pictures in it, you have objects. And that's a very, very strong tool. And I believe in Second Life. I think this is the world which will bring it to us. It is the future of the internet right now. We are developing right now. It'll take some time. I mean, there's lots of problems, sure. But we're right now, you can draw the line directly to the internet before. We're right now 56K modem speed surfing. But this time we're really surfing. So, I'm looking forward.
To the next question, so we...
We talk a lot about personal identities. Yeah, sorry, Denisa. We talk a lot about personal identities, but an aspect that I believe is much... it's interesting, in Second Life, are all these institutions and public bodies, basically, that are inhabiting this world. So my question would be, to the representative of Linden Lab... What do you think will be the future of interaction between the institutions themselves? Because right now, they usually serve just the PR purposes, and they just serve the communication between the institutions and the inhabitants of Second Life. But do you think about some business-to-business model for institutions in Second Life, or how will that develop?
I think what you have to, if you take a step back, you look at Second Life, and at its core, in many ways, it's a development platform. It looks more and more like a development platform every day. And in fact, you know, as we talk about the kinds of things that we want to work on next, a lot of what we're talking about is, well, how do we re-architect the system in a way that allows it to continue to grow and provide stability? Federated identity, voice is a good example. Because what we really think is going to happen is that although originally the people that came to Second Life tended to be individuals who were early adopters and visionaries about where this might go, more and more it's the visionary early adopter organizations that are coming in. And so now we have university campuses. And we have corporations that not just that are using Second Life as a way to experiment with a new kind of brand interaction, but also corporations that are using Second Life as an intranet, a place for global meetings. And so the kinds of tools that they're looking for are things like PowerPoint, or the kind of things that the educators are looking for are equivalents to Blackboard, or there's another tool I think is called Moogle, something that allows them to manage curriculum. So on our part, I think our focus will be to continue to find ways to build out the platform to address all these different kinds of uses. And in that sense, it will look more like the internet. How they come together, I think, is going to depend on their reason for using it. If you are familiar with the New Media Consortium, it's a group of educators who have come together. And so it's not just a single university, but it's more and more educators coming together to explore across universities different projects and ways of learning. I mentioned earlier the Metaverse Republic, which is trying to find a way to allow communities to come together to have sort of an overarching system of governance. So that's another thing that will bring people together. So, you know, as many different ways that there are to communicate and interact in the real world, I think you'll see the same thing in Second Life.
I have a, sorry, to have a question too, but yeah. No, I have a question concerning the development and the future of Second Life. And I think the comparison to the web is a very, yeah, it functions very well. It's a very clear concept, or you can compare it very easy. But how the big difference is that the web is based on this on the internet and on the IP connection and DNS service and all the open and unhierarchy structure of the internet. And Second Life right now is central controlled by Linden Labs. And they're still rumors about the openness and about the open source server software. And how is Linden Lab relating to this topic, and what is the future? I mean, this is something which is for myself like the most interesting question, because that's what you read in the net. And when they do this, when they open up totally, then they will lose it. And so what's going to happen in that field?
I think we're still experimenting with open source on the viewer. And what I can say about the future is, you know, clearly we believe that open systems are the way to go. What our business model might look like is anybody's guess right now. When we started, we had subscriptions. It became clear to us as Second Life started to grow that if it was going to be really a viable system, it needed to have an economic velocity. And that's what led us to start, you know, selling land. Once, as it continues to grow, I'm sure other things might present themselves as business models. But our goal is to let this thing be as big as it can be. And so if that means open sourcing some portion of the server or all of it, I can't tell you today. I think what you'll see initially might be some sort of way that we find for other people to host regions. Maybe that would be licensed, maybe open source. I don't know today. But I do know that we want it to be as big as it can be, and if that's what it takes, then we'll figure out a business model associated with it.
So we have a question from the audience.
Yeah, I'm David. Forgive me, but I'm a bit puzzled by this term global communication and communicating with the world. From the evidence that I've seen, sure, there are several million people who are involved in Second Life, but they are overwhelmingly clustered in the affluent global north, and that's all, period. So where's the global communication, and what's this communication with the world? Does Second Life have a contribution to make to those kinds of realities?
I think that's a question passed on you.
Yeah, that's the same question for any technology, right? It's like,
you could say that about any technology. I'm sorry, of course, I would like to have computers everywhere. Black Africa, Vietnam, Cambodia, while those guys build the computers and we use them. Yes, and they cannot afford them. But you can say that for any technology, cars, telephone, television. It first get usable by who can afford it, and then hopefully it get usable also by who cannot. And hopefully who can use it should do everything they can in order to spread it in place where it's still not possible to use it. But I don't think it's a problem of Second Life or video games. This is a way bigger problem. We have, Second Life is owned by a private company. I don't think they have any, I mean, I think they their only responsibility is towards investors.
At the moment, I don't know that we're large enough to do that. Certainly, I think we would like to do that. A year ago, Second Life was 75% of the population was in the United States. Today, 25% of the population is in the United States. It's grown enormously, first in Europe, then in Brazil, and now Asia. And I suspect, I mean, we have users in over 100 countries around the world. Now, there aren't very many in some of those countries, but they're there. And I don't think the gating factor is anything other than what's being said here. You've got to have broadband. You've got to have, a high-end computer. When those things become available to everyone, then Second Life is there for everyone. That's the reality of the world we live in.
Hello, I'm Vladimir. I have a question for Robin. Robin, can you please maybe describe a little bit more about the trust that you were talking about, and how is it connected with the virtual economy of Second Life? And what are the kind of stakes of this virtual economy? What are the most wanted items? Is it real estate or some erotic content? And how do they influence trust? And also one more question for Eva and Franco. I think it's very interesting that you talked about this fake art. And can you tell us a little bit more about your own art? And is it your own performances? And are they kind of fake? Are they part of the maybe museum system or visual art system or Second Life? And where do you see them? So maybe first Robin. Thanks.
Maybe we take the second question first.
So let's start with where we can see the art, and then we go to if it's real or not. Life sharing started from a commission from the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, which is a very big museum in the States, and it's now it's part of the Walker Art Center collection, and it's it ran at the time on Linux, and it's still like it was usable by anybody. Anybody could copy whatever was inside. So I guess it's also collected in many computers around the world from people who used to connect to live sharing at the time or copy stuff from the computer. And we will perform three synthetic performances in November during Performa, which is the biggest biennial of performance art in New York. So if you are around between October and November, it's the 13th of November. Some museums bought our pieces and now are part of public collections in Spain. The MEIAC is a museum, a public museum in Spain. They bought one of our works. So we have several works collected in private and public museums around the world. And we take part to several exhibitions. There's a huge exhibition about video games now in Spain called Game Scenes at Laboral Art Center, and several of our pieces are on show there. So just send us an email and we can send you more detailed information. And for what concerns fake and real, we consider all our fake performances real artworks. So, I mean, I don't see the distinction between fake work that becomes an artwork and the real work that becomes an artwork.
And the first question dealt with economy in Second Life.
So if I understand your question correctly, you were asking whether or how trust is built up around the economy itself?
How does the trust of the users kind of interact with the economy, virtual economy? Yeah. What does it influence the economy? Does the economy influences the trust? And what are the stakes in this economy?
Well, I think that that's actually starting to change. For a long time, the issue of trust was whether or not a transaction in Linden dollars was going to go through, whether or not when you bought something it would work. If it didn't work, if you could ever find the other person again to have it replaced. And the position that Linden Lab had to take on that was that, you know, the nature of the system is such that we can't possibly go and follow up on every single transaction. And if it fails, it's something that has to be worked out among the residents. What that means is that the residents need to have some sort of a system in place that allows them to know whether or not this is somebody that they can trust when they make a purchase. And what we're seeing now are people experimenting with building different ways to do that. Sean Altman, I don't know if you know him, but he has a rating system that can be used. There's a group experimenting with a Better Business Bureau type of system. There's RatePoint. Looking at maybe something that would look more like an eBay style of system with a rating and a comment. So I actually think that for resident-to-resident transactions, that's something that's being addressed by people within Second Life. There are other kinds of transactions that need to be vetted. What happens, for example, when you buy Linden dollars on eBay and it turns out that the person selling them doesn't really have them or stole them, or there's fake credit cards involved, and then PayPal gets involved, and that, you know, then the trust starts to spill out into the real world, and what are the systems in place in the real world to deal with those kinds of fraudulent things. The last area is an interesting one. People who set up security type of arrangements, like the stock exchange or something that in the real world is a regulated business. In Second Life is not regulated. Linden Lab really can't be a regulator for a securities industry in Second Life. I'm not even sure that the governments of the world would allow us to do that. But we're not in a position to become regulators. Does that mean then that real world regulators will step in and say, wait, if you're going to have a stock exchange, you have to live by the rules of the SEC or the corresponding group in Europe? I don't know. That's something that we're looking at and trying to understand now. So our goal is to try to put the things in place that will allow people to trust Linden Lab and Second Life as a system, to allow them to trust each other. Whether or not we do that ourselves or try to facilitate it depends on the given situation.
What said Ed will lead us to a discussion about rules in Second Life. And it's now 4 minutes to 9 o'clock, so that means that we're going to come to an end. So one more question, if anyone wants to ask.
I guess there's one short story that was sort of the thing that concerned me most when I heard it about Second Life, looking into it, but it relates to the, it was interesting to hear you say that people are setting up judicial systems and governance, and I'm interested in the relationships, but also the implications of those things into the real world. And the story was about some prominent figure who gave a presentation in Second Life, and a set of people who created a scenario around her that was an embarrassment to her. Somebody recorded that and put it on YouTube. And she wanted it taken down because she felt it was detrimental to her person. She couldn't win the case based on moral rights because there aren't any in virtual worlds. She won it on copyright. And that threw up a really interesting question for me about what we give up in Second Life and what kind of systems for judgment and value we create in there and what implications that might lead to once we're all used to them there. I don't know if anybody wanted to comment on that.
Well, I don't know. Is there anyone? Yeah. Maybe we get an answer from the audience.
Well, this case existed, but the jurisdiction is already changing, and there are already lawyers and judges that think that there are moral rights within virtual worlds, and that virtual persons can be hurt within their feelings because they're real persons behind it, and there are many virtual persons, and in especially this case that you mentioned, Anje Chang, everybody knows who is the real person behind her. So nowadays the jurisdiction would probably look different already. So there is a very quick movement.
So it was a statement from a lawyer. Peter Hallander is a lawyer. So
I have a short one. It's going to be developed. I mean, it's coming up. I mean, this is a big question, but it will come up. I mean, people are thinking about it. People have these fears, and it's, they just have to develop. We just started.
Yeah. It's not something I feel against Second Life. It's just one of the most interesting things about it. And I think when you were saying, will organizations come in and tell us how to run a stock market? I think that kind of answers that question, because institutions will step in and say how it should be done. Is that example?
I'm not sure what you mean with moral rights, because of course every society functioned with ethics. It's important, but it's not a legal thing. So it's not important legally wise. Moral is, ethic is another part. You can't claim I have right if the law is different. So you have a chance. You haven't a chance in real life. And I would describe the same question or the same situation than you, but with another spin. So you said what might we lose in virtual worlds like Second Life if there's an absence of such moral rights, and you could see it as a freedom also. It's also a freedom, and so it's the same thing, but it's not a spin.
Okay, I'll say thank you to all who joined us to this discussion. Thank you to Robin Harper, to Andreas Lange, Eva and Franco Mattes, to Drew Harry and Aaron Bartol.